Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. Now, where's McGuinness?
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm Lynn. I'm your host for Talking Twilight Zone, and I'm here with my co-hosts, Bobby Neer, Robert, and Dave. Good afternoon, everyone. Happy St. Patrick's Day to one and all. Hello, guys.
Happy afternoon to you all.
Yes, and look at the Irish. Look at the Irish to you.
See, I'm part Irish, so I can do that. I'm part Irish, part German, so. My mom's side, part Irish.
I'm part Irish too, Bobby. Bobby.
Actually, that's Bobby O'Neill today.
All right. And now, I have to mute poor Bobby so I don't have an echo. But look at the Irish. We'll bring him right back. Okay, look at the Irish.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
I was going to try to
fit in a Children of the Corn joke, but I just couldn't get it figured out. So. Oh, well.
Well, I just do a faith in the gorra. You doing anything? Anybody doing anything special today? Because I'm ordering Chinese food.
Drinking.
Went to the parade.
I think we're all drinking. Are we all drinking? Rick, are you drinking?
Yep. Right now, no, but all day. Yeah.
Oh, Rick, that's all right with us. Just get yourself some Guinness or something like that, and we'll be doing good. I'm drinking. Robert's drinking. I'm sure Dave's drinking. Now, I know Dave's drinking.
You know me so well.
I know you so well.
Did you get your Guinness there, Dave, or will you have the drink?
No, I've got a wine because I was doing my V-Bog earlier, so wine. But a Guinness would go down rather nicely.
Of course, and of course. Now, I'm sure you did. You get some green wine? Did you put a little green food coloring in that? No. Of course, you would not.
It was black then. You're a sadist, Dave. A sadist.
You would never do such a thing.
I want the black wine. Yeah.
Well, we're celebrating St. Patrick's Day tonight because we're ordering Chinese food. That's what we're having tonight.
Nothing that says St. Patty's Day like Chinese.
Chinese food, like Kung Pao chicken, right? Kung Pao beef. All right, okay. Well, today we're discussing an episode that most Twilight Zone fans consider to be one of the ultimate classics, It's a Good Life. And I'm sure I don't need to tell I'm sure I don't need to tell much about this episode, but for those who need a refresher on it, we have to kind of do this. So, you know, you have little six-year-old Anthony Fremont, who's a little monster and the worst nightmare of
everyone.
Or you
want me to bring on the professor himself before you start into the synopsis?
Oh, sure.
There,
yes.
Lynn?
Yes.
Okay. Well, let's bring on the professor himself, Rod Serling. And everybody, if you're hungry and want to get something to drink, go ahead. This is a 2-minute opening, and I think this must be the longest one of Twilight Zone. So.
Yeah, but you know, you're absolutely right. I think it's the longest or the second longest. And you're right, Robert. I forgot you were doing the clip. I'm so used to not doing the clips lately. So there you go. Go.
Okay.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Tonight's story of Twilight Zone is somewhat unique and calls for a different kind of introduction. This, as you may recognize, is a map of the United States, and there's a little town there called Peeksville. On a given morning not too long ago, the rest of the world disappeared, and Peeksville was left all alone. Its inhabitants were never sure whether the world was destroyed and only Peeksville left untouched, or whether the village had somehow been taken away. They were, on the other hand, sure of one thing, the cause. A monster had arrived in the village. Just by using his mind, he took away the automobiles, the electricity, the machines, because they displeased him. And he moved an entire community back into the Dark Ages. Just by using his mind. Now I'd like to introduce you to some of the people in Peeksville, Ohio. This is Mr. Fremont. It's in his farmhouse that the monster resides. This is Mrs. Fremont. And this is Aunt Amy, who probably had more control over the monster in the beginning than almost anyone. But one day she forgot. She began to sing aloud. Now the monster doesn't like singing, so his mind snapped at her and turned her into the smiling, vacant thing you're looking at now. She sings no more. And you'll note that the people in Peeksville, Ohio, have to smile. They have to think happy thoughts and say happy things, because once displeased, the monster can wish them into a cornfield or change them into a grotesque walking horror. This particular monster can read minds, you see. He knows every thought. He can feel every emotion. Oh, yes, I did forget something, didn't I? I forgot to introduce you to the monster. This is the monster. His name is Anthony Fremont. He's 6 years old with a cute little boy face and blue, guileless eyes. But when those eyes look at you, you'd better start thinking happy thoughts, because the mind behind them is absolutely in charge. This is the Twilight Zone.
I know what happened. It's the leprechauns in league with Anthony. They took the whole community and set it outside itself.
You know what? If you died, Bill Mumy's hair green, he would look like a little leprechaun, wouldn't he? He really would. He'd look like a little leprechaun. But I'm glad you played
Not as evil as the leprechaun in the leprechaun movies. Who took my gold?
Rick, what did you say, Rick?
I said what hair?
What hair?
Yes.
That little mafia.
Have you seen him lately?
Oh, my God, yeah. Actually, I think he looks better now than he did when he was a kid. I don't know. I mean, his little girl's absolutely adorable.
Oh,
she's precious. Yeah, how he managed to have a kid look like that, I don't know.
We'll talk about that later.
But his wife is pretty, too. But anyway, okay, well, then I really don't need to say much about this episode. I mean, the kid's a monster.
Yeah, thanks, Rod. Okay, let's review.
Yeah, thank you, Rod. I mean, you took care of that for me. It's great because, you know, the little kid's a little creep. He's a monster. Okay, I don't care if it's a G-rated show. He's a little bastard. And so, you know, he comes in here and he takes away the automobiles and he takes away the electricity and the television signals. You can only watch what he wants to see on TV. And even at the grocery store, it's just lovely. We have no bar soap. We haven't had bar soap for a year. Of course, there's a bar. He's a kid. He doesn't want to get washed. You know, so everybody else has to go around stinking like a pig. So everybody stinks like a goat and a pig because there's no bar soap. There's nothing. I mean, you know,
except
the adults.
Except for candy and cereal.
Except for the cereal and the tomato soup. Remember the tomato soup?
Oh, yeah, right, tomato soup.
Yeah, the tomato soup. And the adults, you know, they're scared to death of them. You know, everything he does is good. That's real good, Anthony. Oh, that's good you've done that, Anthony. That's real good. You know, so, you know, if they don't, where do they go?
Or she can just go ahead and kick his ass.
Kick his ass. Into the mystical. But everybody goes in the mystical cornfield, and we want to send him into the mystical cornfield from which there is no return. He hates dogs. That makes me hate him immediately because he hates dogs, and I love all animals. You know, so he hates dogs, and he sends the dogs into the cornfield. His mother and father have no control over this little creep, you know, and they don't, even if they're scared, they don't show it, you know. So finally,
even Irish setters, he sits in the cornfield, huh?
Them Irish setters go to the cornfield. Yes. So finally, at Don Hollis's birthday party, the poor man, he gets a Perry Como record, and he can't even listen to Perry Como. Oh my goodness! So then, the poor guy, he gets drunk. Poor guy gets drunk, and then he says, well, that's it. All about had it. You people had this little creep, and somebody needs to kill him. I'm drunk, and I don't care. You got to kill this kid. And the kid says, well, you're a bad man. You're a very bad man. And he turns him into a wonderful-looking jack. I like the jack-in-the-box. It was a wonderful-looking jack-in-the-box. And, of course,
you're a bad man. You're a very bad man.
There, just to help you out.
cornfield. And he does. And his wife is mortified, of course. You know, this is horrible. You know, your wife or your husband is all, send it into the cornfield. So, you know, then, of course, the snow falls outside, and Daddy's all upset. And says, it's going to kill off half the crops. And the wife says, oh, no, no, don't say anything. He's, oh, but that's good. You're making snow, Anthony. That's good. Tomorrow's going to be a real good day. So.
We have no food on the table, but, hey, I'm happy about it.
That's right. And he sits there with that smug little smile on his rotten little face. And so. I'm going to mute Bobby, and if I start to get an echo, I'm going to mute him back up again. But when people talk about this, when people talk about the classic zone episodes, this is almost always mentioned along with Time Enough at Last, Eye of the Beholder, and really all
Monsters
the,
Are Due on Maple Street. Definitely.
Exactly. All of the outstanding episodes.
Deserve, man.
The Served Man, exactly, exactly, all of these. And, I mean, it's a frightening episode, and it's the kind of episode that leaves you fairly speechless at the end. And why? Because this kid is allowed to exist the way he's existing, and these people are existing the way they're existing, and nobody will kill the little SOB, you know? And I'm telling you, I don't care that it's their kid. If it was my kid, guess what? I'd have to kill him. I'd have to kill him. There's just no way. I don't know. I mean,
you'd
I know
be
people
in the cornfield, though.
Well, but you got to come up behind him. You got to come up behind him when he's distracted, like he was with Dan Hollis. He was concentrating so hard on Dan Hollis about being a bad man that someone, Aunt Amy, could have come up with that. You saw her try to, ready to grab that fireplace poker. She could have come up and killed him, but everybody was so scared to death. And Dave here just typed into the chat room, better watch out, Bobby. And Felix just typed in, creepy kid, he was bad. Well, that's true. And, you know, I just think that the whole thing is crazy because, okay, first of all, okay, here's my thing. Billy Mumy, who I used to call Mummy for years. Everyone called him Mummy, even in the 60s. No one knew how to pronounce his name. There was no internet or anything that told you how his name was really pronounced. So for the longest time, it was Billy Mumy. And I think he was a sensational child actor. He really was. But no,
I love
never
how on his side he pronounces for everybody in parentheses there.
M-O-O-M-E, right, exactly. But you know what? I don't think he was particularly cute. I never thought he was cute. He's a little boy who has a very impish, bratty face. I don't find him to be cute at all. So to me, he's just a little boy with an impish, bratty face. He could give an evil stare that no other child actor could even come close to giving. I mean, you gotta agree. He would bug out his eyes, clench his lips, with that cold, evil look. It sends chills right through you. So I think this episode is even creepier, though, because we never see that infamous cornfield to which Anthony loved to send his enemies. And so the tension and the fear was more intense because we could only imagine what awaited his victims. He hated anyone who hated him, didn't he? Everyone who hated him, he hated them, and including the doggies. The doggies didn't have a chance. Cats, dogs, anything. Gophers, a three-headed gopher. He killed everything.
Even alcohol didn't have a chance, did it?
Alcohol. I would. That's what I. They should have drugged that kid. If they could have drugged that kid, that they might have had a chance then if they drugged them. But I think one of the scariest scenes, of course, is the jack-in-the-box and that blood-curdling scream that comes from his wife afterwards. You know, but, you know, my questions are basically why. Okay, here's my first question. Why did his parents arrange to have Dan's party at their house? Now, are you telling me that, first of all, I need to know, does the kid know everything that's going on in every single house? That I find hard to believe. And the reason
then
I find
they
that
would
hard
have been sneaky, and Anthony don't like sneaky people, remember.
Yeah, okay. But remember, when Dan Hollis said, oh, can we play the record here? Can we play just until just the orchestra part? And the father says, well, no, you better wait then. We better not then. We don't know where the singing comes in. You better wait till you get home. Well, Anthony hates singing. So if Dan Hollister could play his record at home, obviously Anthony can't hear it. Or why would they tell him to play it at home? So why would I can't understand why they had the party at their house. Why subject those few people left in the town to an evening with this little creep? I mean, I don't think Anthony gave a rat's ass about Dan or his party, so I don't know why they had it there. And
yeah, the piano player very much reminded me of Mel Tremaine. Even though it's not Mel Tremaine, he looked very much like a young Mel Tremaine.
Seriously? I know.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I thought I was the only one who thought that. Didn't he look like Mel Tremaine? Oh, my God, yes. He totally looks like Mel Tremaine. And, okay, here's the other question I have. All right, the father pleads with him, okay, to send the jack-in-the-box into the cornfield, okay? And the little brat complies, and he sends the jack-in-the-box into the cornfield. So if he's so easy to get along with as far as when his parents ask him to do something, why couldn't they just say, don't do this. Don't turn Dan Hollister into a jack-in-the-box. I mean, it seems like they had a little bit of control, but not a whole lot. You know, I don't get...
Because
like,
then you wouldn't have a story.
Well, exactly. Exactly. Because you would think the father could go over to him and say, Anthony, you can't make it snow. Please stop making it snow because it's going to ruin the crops. And at the end, you know, he just, oh, it's good that you're making it snow, Anthony. It's good. You know, so, I mean, here's the whole deal here. It's a little kid who's got total control over his parents, total control over everything. He's a godlike creature who is evil. And, you know, and it reminds me of that movie Firestarter with Drew Barrymore.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, her character didn't have a whole range of powers that Anthony had, but she could start fires merely by thinking about it, like Carrie, you know. But the remake of this episode for 1983, Twilight Zone, the movie, that was very inferior for many reasons, and especially the ending. Now, I'm sure everyone saw Twilight Zone, the movie, and they saw this remake. The kid who played Anthony actually had somewhat of a soft side to him, and you know, the special effects were silly, totally overdone.
They added a teacher character.
Right, yeah. Kathleen Quinlan. Yeah. It was terrible. I thought it was the worst thing, and it was almost a comedy.
The only thing good was Bill Mumy as the father.
Yes. Yes. And he was in the diner right at the very, very beginning.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just wish people would leave these classic shows alone and stop trying to remake them. I mean, the writers need to come up with an original thought once in a while. Stop trying to remake things that shouldn't be remade. It was the 2000 Twilight Zone series. They did do an episode of It's a Good Life, but it was a sequel called It's Still a Good Life. And I think everyone...
Continuation. Yeah.
Yes, and the little girl, you know, she had his powers now. And that actually was one of the few, and I will say few, episodes from any of the Twilight Zone remakes from either the 80s or the 2000s that was any good. And I thought that was great, and his little girl did a fabulous job as the little girl had the powers. And, you know, that was the only thing about any of the remakes that I liked. But, 98% of those episodes stunk. So, grown-up Billy Mummy was in it, and his daughter, and old Cloris Leachman. I thought that was pretty good. But other than that, they need to leave our classics alone. And so with that being said, this episode, absolutely one of the great ones, and it will always get a 5. Classic rating from me, and now I will turn this over to Robert.
Thank you, Lynn. You know, it brings up a wonderful question. If Anthony was born during King Arthur's time, would he beat Merlin's butt, or would Merlin win? Kind of an interesting question on that, because Anthony almost did what Merlin could do, because Merlin could walk through time, and I imagine Anthony could do the same. It seems like he wasn't limitless on what powers he could do. So.
But so could Superman. So you think Anthony could beat Superman?
Well, we never seen him fly or anything, but he could probably emulate. You know what he very much reminds me of? The X-Men, Rogue. He could be like a Rogue where he would inherit the powers from the others. And,
well, there you go.
Be
yeah.
able to use that. Yeah. But we're getting
Superman
away from this.
Superman gets her back down. So. Okay.
Yeah. Yep. I pretty much said in my review, as I mentioned earlier, about how long this opening was, because, man, he really sets this up for you before and we even start the episode. And as I clocked this at about 2 minutes long, has to be one of the longest. Maybe Rod felt that he had to set the place up. I don't know if it would have worked where if we just would have picked up, you know, if the town wasn't mentioned or whatever was mentioned. I think some of us could have figured that out, but it was nice. I felt of him just coming on there. We never see much of him. He's only on for like about 20 seconds or whatever, and then we hear his voice at the end of the episodes. But, you know, it's kind of nice when we get to see a little bit more of him in this one. I'm not going to go more into the episode itself because Lynn pretty much, you know, went mostly into it. One of the best of the Twilight Zone episodes, classic, definitely 5 out of 5 I gave it, because it had the atmosphere, it was creepy, it had everything you wanted out of story, scary, I mean, and the best scene is the birthday scene with the Jack in a Box. So, I mean, this is one of my favorites. Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, Timing Up at Last, put this episode in that realm. I think Cloris Leachman did a wonderful job as the mother.
Yeah.
We, of course, you know, get her, you know, continue on with the continuation of the episode. Not as good, I feel, as this one. Now, I know you and Bobby said you got the one with Forest Whitaker doing the Rod Serling openings. Is that right?
Yes.
So did you rewatch this at the same time you rewatched The Good Life, or just...
No, you mean It's Still a Good Life?
Yeah.
We watched it a while ago, didn't we, Bob?
I don't really remember what it was. It wasn't last night, I know that.
No. We watched it about 3 months ago when we rewatched It's Still a Good Life. But, you know, you can actually see that. That's one of the few episodes, one of the newer episodes you can watch on YouTube that's not torn apart because it's not CBS.
I have absolutely no use for sequels and remakes. I have no use for them at all.
No, me either. But this
pointless.
Is
pointless.
A,
they
this one.
And in today, and in today's world, where people have entire seasons of TV series dating back to the 50s, it's not necessary for anybody to remake anything. All you got to do is go over to somebody's house and you can watch it right there. So it's ridiculous.
But
I'm just
still,
saying,
it was good they
now.
Didn't go that route, Bobby, and remake.
Well,
they just made a continuation.
Yeah, that's true, but still.
Yeah, it would have been worse if they tried to remake it.
It was a sequel, which I thought was actually out of all of the... I mean, we saw the... I saw the 1980s ones. Bobby has not seen all the 1980s ones yet. But we both saw all the... You have to, right. And I've seen all the 2000 ones. And of the 2000s, this is probably one of the best ones as far as of any of the 2000s. I absolutely hated the 2000s Twilight Zone. But this, along with maybe two others, I actually could stand.
Well, the nice thing about It's Still a Good Life is you have the original actor portraying the original role. So that's one plus for that episode,
that
at least they didn't recast it with somebody else. You have the mother, Cloris Leachman, who reprises her role. So that's still another plus there.
And if John Larch were still alive, he probably would have been in it too. You know, I have no doubt about that. And I thought that this was actually one of the better ones of the 2000 series, but I was not thrilled with any of the 2000s. And the 1980s ones, I was surprised that the 1980s lasted as long as it did, 5 seasons. I was surprised because I was not too crazy about any of them. I could give you a handful of those that I liked. But,
I agree with that. There were a handful, at least with the first attempt to try to redo it with the Grateful Dead music opening for that.
Mm.
But talking about It's Still a Good Life, and it was amazing how, you know, of course, Leachman's character, his mother, actually got the gall up 40 years later to finally tell him off. And this is the clip here.
Ethel, you can't do this.
Of course I can. It's easy.
I knew about Audrey's powers before anyone, so if you have to send somebody to the cornfield, send me.
Stay out of this.
Grandma, you're gonna make him mad.
That's not all I'd like to do. For 40 years, I did nothing. Are you tortured the people of this town? I sat back and watched while you destroyed everything I cared about. Everything I loved.
Not everyone. You love me.
Love you? Love you? I cursed the day I gave birth to you. Night after night, I lie awake in bed, thinking of ways to put an end to this madness. To put an end to you. And you want to know why, Anthony? You are a bad man. A very bad man. The worst that ever lived.
Mom, I'm warning you.
You are a monster. A spoiled, vicious monster. And if anybody deserves to be in the cornfield, it's you! Walter, do it. Wish him away. Do it now. Do it now!
Audrey?
Audrey, what are you waiting for?
I can't hurt Daddy.
No!
What's wrong, Daddy?
I don't know. Just a little lonely, I guess.
I bet I know it would cheer you up.
What would that be? You brought what back?
Everything. All the different countries, the cities. You think we could visit New York?
New York's a big place. Lots of people.
Yeah, and they all better be nice to us, or you know what we'll do to them.
Hello, welcome, Armageddon.
Mm-hmm. And you know what's funny? It cracks me up because he says New York's a big place. How
lots
does he
of people.
Know? Yeah, lots of, how does he know? How does he know that? He destroyed it when he was 5 years old. How does he know anything before he was five or six? I'm sorry, before he was six. How does he know how big New York City is? So that's kind of a little flaw there in that he says New York's a big city, lots of people. How does he know
Anthony,
anything
I remember
about
before it all changed how nice this world was. You know there
when he
was
five?
A place me and your
when
dad visited? Yeah, New York. You could have said there's times where they traveled, went places, or had cousin in Missouri or something like that.
Oh, yeah, because it's parents. You're right. Yeah, it's parents. Yeah, you're right about
but
that.
But it brings up the question, why would anybody want to get together with him and have a child? Where does Audrey come from? That's the whole thing.
And then the wife is gone. She pissed them off. So now she's out in the cornfield. She probably said, "You want eggs tomorrow morning?" I mean, she's out in the cornfield. This woman is like, you know, what do you think? Your steak's not done well enough? You don't like the way I cook my steak? That's it. You're out in the cornfield. Oh,
yeah, unless
not...
he invented Audrey, you know, out of his thoughts. The only thing was human companionship. And
well, I think
you've seen he had no regret when his mom disappeared. You know, he said, you know, his little girl asked him, well, are you okay, Daddy? You know, I'm kind of lonely. And, you know, he didn't say,
yeah,
well, I miss my mom, or, you know, she, your grandmother was, you know, so, oh, I'm lonely. So you've seen how his mind was and how's her mind.
Wasn't it somewhere in the beginning of that episode that they did mention her mother, that he did have a wife? He had a wife. Obviously, he had a wife.
Right.
I think that was mentioned in the beginning. And
ooh,
she must have cooked his eggs wrong. And, you know, she ended up in the cornfield somewhere. I mean, I don't know. But, I don't know. Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
But I also mentioned, too, in my review about the movie, as you did as well, very disappointing, but one nice thing was about it was the introduction of it by Burgess Meredith.
Portrait of a Woman in Transit. Helen Foley, age 27. Occupation, school teacher. Up until now, the pattern of her life has been one of unrelenting sameness, waiting for something different to happen. Helen Foley doesn't know it yet, but her waiting has just ended.
Okay, I give up. Where am I?
Well, you're not lost. It looks like you missed the turn off at Clippertville. Right there. Yeah. Okay. Half mile down the road is a gas station. That's Beaumont. You hang a left, you go four blocks. The highway cuts right in front of it. You can't miss it. And you probably go...
Hey, kid.
Easy on the machinery.
It doesn't work right.
Kid, I don't build the games. I just keep the quarters. Let's just stick another quarter and maybe it'll work better. See, the highway splits right outside of town. It goes off the
court.
Walter, the kid is screwing up the TV. Hey, it's his quarter. The TV's free, you know.
Yeah, I got 20 bucks on this.
Lots of luck. So, where are you headed?
Willoughby.
Hey, nice town. You got a job set up there or what?
No, not really.
Where are you from?
Homewood.
Mm, nice town.
If you say so.
Hello? Yeah. Hey, Walter. It's your wife.
Your wife.
Thanks.
Okay.
Hey, hey, Charlie. Hey, come on, man. Take it easy. Take it easy.
That's enough.
What's going on here? I hear what happened. Hey, look, I don't know what happened, lady boy. Whatever happened, I'm sorry.
Yes, well... Yeah.
Hey, forget about the sandwich. No charge.
Terrific. Nice town.
Yeah, nice town. And the whole thing is messed up to where the town's not even isolated. The guy asked what's going on. If he knew what was going on, he was, you know, knew Anthony didn't wish nobody away in the cafeteria, in the cafe there. Bill Mumy was there telling, you know, the other guy to stop it and stuff because they were trying to watch the fight. That's why
right.
I played this.
And Bill Mumy was
clip.
Sitting. Bill Mumy was sitting there at the bar, and he's the one who stopped them from beating the kid up.
Right, and then all the mentions of. You know, Clifford Bill and Willoughby and Beaumont, you know, the episode and the directors.
I'm going to Willoughby. Yeah, like she threw that in.
Yep. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, not that great. And especially the ending of it was so freaking creepy because of all these things you hear about kids and their teachers. You know, the way it ends on a cloud of mist and a happy little, you know, Oz type, you know, Wizard of Oz situation at the end of it. Yeah, it was just very creepy at the end of how this section of the movie ended. So, but yeah.
I hated the ending. I really hated the ending of that movie. I did.
Yep. But I agree with you. It was turning into a comedy aspect. Very
Yeah, with all the special effects and the crazy characters coming out. Yeah.
Too much special effects, too much comedy. It was, whereas It's Still a Good Life was a sequel, not a remake. You have a couple of actors that was in the original, that was in the continuation, which wasn't too bad. This one here, you have one of the original as just kind of a extra or cameo appearance on the set itself. So,
right, exactly.
Yeah. But, yeah, 5 out of 5, classic for this one. Very much enjoyed the story. And the way everything just flowed with this, wonderful. And I'll go ahead and pass everything over to Bobby.
All right, thank you, Robert. Well, for anyone who read my review on our message board or in our file section of the group, what I'm about to say is pretty repetitious, but it's always what I felt about this episode. It's clearly an all-time classic. It gets the kind of universal acclaim that you rarely see even in this series. It's certainly creepy and unusual and scary, but I do have a few problems with it that stopped me from assigning a 5 rating to it, like almost everyone did in our poll, other than myself and 2 other people also in the poll, by the way, gave it 4.5. First of all, to get back to something that Robert talked about extensively, if I could talk to Rod Serling, I would ask him why he felt it necessary to give out so much information during his introduction to this episode. It simply doesn't make any sense to tell this much. Please, Rod, let me find out for myself just how evil this brat is. Even in a 23-minute episode, it won't take long to figure it out. That whole middle section there talking about who else is living there and how there's nobody else left around is all very nice, but you know, I don't need to know that. I don't need it at all. Generally, I love Rod's intros. They were always something to look forward to. And to the best of my memory, only Alfred Hitchcock on his series gave a little intro on his own show. But he never gave anything away that I can remember. He just, you know, tried to be kind of cute, and that was about it. You didn't really know what you were going to see. I like Serling walking out of the shadows at the beginning of stories to warn us that something special and creepy is about to happen. But I think in a couple of stories, this isn't the only one. He has a habit sometimes of talking too much. And in this case, I think he did. Does it ruin the story? No, it doesn't ruin the story, but it doesn't help any either. Imagine, if you will, if he did the same kind of thing on some other classic episode. Suppose in Eye of the Beholder, he had come in at the beginning and said that the woman in bed really isn't grotesque. It's the people around who are. Imagine the impact would be lost at the end of it. Or in The Hitchhiker, if he told us at the beginning that there really was Mr. Death stalking that woman. You got to be careful what you do. Let people figure it out on their own. Don't tell them too much. Today on TV, nobody does that anywhere on any TV series. I kind of miss it. I think it adds something. But you got to be real, real careful not to tell too much. In a 24-minute episode, you know, there's a lot of time there. It becomes obvious right away what's going on there. And so I think he should have kept his mouth shut, quite frankly. The other problem I have with it is the story itself, because it really makes little sense and is hardly believable, as has been pointed out already on the show, for these adults to be kept captive like this by one small child. Yeah, he's dangerous and he's deadly, but there are still enough of them left in the world to rush him all at once. And I think they should have turned him upside down, not for a spanking, but to grab that finger he likes to point at people and stick it where the sun don't shine so he can eventually put himself in the cornfield. It's a risk for sure, but nobody could possibly live in this kind of fear at some point. You're going to take the chance to simply get rid of him. Of course, then you don't have the story, but still, the whole time I'm watching, I'm thinking to myself, just how long are you going to put up with this kind of garbage? It's ridiculous. Now, there are things I do love about the episode that may be a little different than what other people like. One of the things I like, and what makes it a classic, is this portrayal of this child and the way it is. I've been watching TV for longer than I would ever admit, and the fact is that over many years, it is nearly impossible to see children portrayed as evil on a TV show. Nearly in every show you see, kids are portrayed as just too cute for words. Sure, sometimes they misbehave, they do something bad, but generally nobody dies because of it, or nobody disappears. I could name dozens of kids of the past who fit this profile, dating all the way back to the 50s. And Father Knows Best, to use an example, where the youngest daughter whined and cried ad nauseum. She was a terrible brat. But she didn't try to kill anyone, although it could kill you to try to watch this going on. Because Lynn watches it sometimes on TV today, and she's always moaning about it. Right, Lynn? Doesn't she drive you nuts?
I would have liked to have killed her.
That's
oh, my
saying.
God. If I had a chance, I would have strangled that little...
Yeah, but she's not the only one.
Don't make me use bad language.
In the annals of Too Cute to Stand, there were Buffy and Jody and Family Affair who took Cute to a new level of nauseous. Even the Beaver and Wally
well.
Surely had no evil tendencies.
Well, I don't think any. No, I don't. A lot of them, I don't think were very cute. I mean, a lot of them that.
Yeah, but they didn't do anything really bad.
Over the years, thought were cute. I don't even think were really that cute. I mean, some of them were actually ugly little bastards. I'm sorry.
and even that other great child actor Ron Howard, even Opie, you know, sometimes did the wrong thing, but he never came close to doing anything even really bad. And even Dennis the Menace, which is also back on TV these days.
Oh, give me a chance to grab that little kid.
No,
oh,
but he never
God.
Really lived up to his name. He never really hurt anybody.
Oh, let me get him by the scruff. Don't get
well,
me started.
Well, he's a pain in the ass, but he didn't try to kill anybody.
Let me grab him by the scruff. Ooh.
Now, I don't doubt that. Anyway, so now we get this story, and it's a breath of fresh air to see a kid finally portrayed this way. And personally, I like kids, and I used to babysit a lot when I was a teenager. I never had any problems with them, but then nobody was like this. So this kind of took guts to put this on TV. It stands out because it's just so unusual. But you know what? Even so, it never would have worked without the right child actor in the part. And that brings us to Billy Mooney, this is a bravura performance. It rivals those of Burgess Meredith in Time Enough at Last and Agnes Moorehead in The Invaders. It's that good. Mooney, one of the great kid actors of all time, along with Ron Howard, of course, makes this work like nobody else could. It would never work with anybody else. I don't think anybody had the ability then. I don't think anybody does today. That evil stare alone, to say nothing of that finger that he points at people without wavering a millimeter, is so disturbing. It makes you, want to put yourself in the cornfield even before he sends you there. He takes it seriously. He's not trying. He may look cute in some respect, like the intro said, but he surely is not. And you really are disturbed by that. So he's different than every other person, and he's got a website now, which I posted on the message board at our group. 53 years in the business is quite remarkable.
He's pretty cool. Yeah, he's pretty cool right now. He's done a lot of CDs, and he's pretty awesome right now. I like the guy. I like him better as an adult than I did as a kid.
Well, I mean, I liked him as a kid. He was in other episodes, too. The one they showed on TV last night, what is that called, Lynn? The one where the grandmother's trying to...
Long distance call.
Yeah, he was good in that, too. Because
I liked him as a kid. I didn't like him as a kid, but I'm saying as an adult, he's done a lot more, and he's a little bit more likable as an adult to me, anyway.
Well,
he's worked since he was age 4, so, I mean...
Exactly.
Worked for all those years.
He's never been out of the business. He and
Ron Howard simply rewrote TV. It's really quite remarkable. Anyway, about this episode, I gave it a 4.5. You know, in the poll, 4.5, 5, it's all the same. I just wanted to indicate that I had a couple of problems with it, but, I think it's obviously one of the best ones. It's certainly, if I was writing up a top 10, it would be in that top 10. I don't know. I wouldn't put it in the top 3 or anywhere because I think there are ones that are more compelling than this, but still it's a very, very creepy and very disturbing episode, and it really is what The Twilight Zone is all about. So in that respect, it is a classic episode. So there you go.
Nice.
All right, Lynn, back to you.
All right, Dave.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
You're a very good lady.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, by the way.
Thank you. You're a very good lady. You're a very good lady. I'm covering myself here.
I love
Eliza
you.
Eliza Doolittle, you're a lady.
I love Dave. Dave Cooper is my favorite person on St. Patrick's Day.
Well, I think with this episode, I enjoyed it because it was first aired 3rd of November 1961. It's episode 73 in series 3. And we've got quite a big ensemble cast here. And by that, I mean that we have had episodes where there's quite a large cast. but many of them don't talk, the sort of non-speaking parts. But here there's, you know, a similar sort of on cast as we did with the, you know, the nuclear shelter one. And it was good cast. I'm not going to repeat the things that people have said, but I thought it was very atmospheric and well done. I think the way that this child dominated them, and the reason why in the opening reference it was said that this is like a little isolated town, they've basically been cut off. The thing about why this child could dominate them for so long and them not overpower him, if you remember, there's the one scene quite near the end where it suddenly starts snowing outside, and the father's a little bit worried they're going to lose half the crop. But the point is, you don't hear the boy, you know, he doesn't point, he doesn't say anything out loud, because the father turns to him and said, are you doing that? Are you making it snow? And he says, yes. And the reason I think that is quite important, because it gives the reference to the fact that, you know, it's not as though they could grab him from behind, pin him down on the floor and put gaffer tape over his mouth, because he could still make these things happen just by thought, like
with
he made
his
it.
Mind.
Pardon me for interrupting, but when he turns the guy into a jack-in-the-box, you don't have an opportunity right then to grab him right at that point?
Well, I think they were too horrified by that. I mean, that's what I would have thought. But you're right. I mean, the obvious thing is in the middle of the night when he's asleep, I suppose. One would assume there could have been a throwaway line where the parents defend him, you know, where, you know, like they have a secret meeting when the boy's out playing, they say, quick, come in the house, and they have a secret meeting, and the parents say, no, you think of something else, we'll do anything other than kill him, and that could have done it. But, of course, you've got the 23-minute, 22-minute limit. Of course, the playing father, John Larch, he's been in a couple of others. He was in Perchance to Dream and
played that
sheriff in the not-too-brilliant episode Dust. But, of course, he's well-known for many other things. Chief of Police in Dirty Harry and a few other things. Quite a nice actor, really, indeed.
Was he in Dirty Harry?
Yeah, he played the Chief of Police in Dirty
Harry. I didn't know that. Oh, I did not know that. Thank you, Dave, for telling me that. I didn't know that.
And thank God he's one of those ones that did live a little bit longer. When we did last week's, they all seemed to be dying off in their 60s. He lived till he was 91, died in 2005. But one thing that nobody, as far as I, unless I've drifted off in the middle of the show, has mentioned, the fact that probably one of the reasons why this is a good episode is because we've got a science fiction writer, a writer of short stories and an editor of a sci-fi magazine or periodical, Jerome Bixby, writing this episode. And
right.
I'm almost surprised that Robert didn't take the opportunity to get playing some Star Trek stuff, because this is the same guy that wrote a few episodes of Star Trek, Mirror Mirror, Day of the Dove, one that both me and Robert have mentioned before, Requiem for Methuselah, which is a really good sci-fi episode, and By Any Other Name, which is another really good sci-fi concept, because we actually have aliens from another galaxy, not just from a distant star, but from a galaxy beyond our own. So he really was a sci-fi writer, where I think in many of the stories that we've had, they're mainly morality tales in many ways, and this is by definition probably veering towards horror, but at least I do feel as though this writer, as I say, Jerome Kirby, does need a nod. He wrote... I believe he wrote westerns under different names as well. He wrote under quite a lot of different names. And this is just reading from the wiki page of his. So I think that definitely is something that needs a mention. And,
sure, I agree.
Other than that, certainly four and a half, it is one of the really good episodes. Well acted. Creepy kid, as you quite rightly said, and tomorrow's going to be a really good day.
At least there will be a tomorrow.
Which tomorrow, anyway, I am.
Good day, a really good day. Oh my God. Yeah, it's just unbelievable. Great episode. What's his name? John Larch. Did you say, Dave, that John Larch just died about 7 years ago?
Yes, yeah, age 91 in 2005. Mm. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And I'm assuming, by the way, the ones that are sent out to the cornfield, I assume the test turned into some sort of scarecrows, I suppose. That's the analogy there, I would have thought.
Mm. The thing that surprised me, he died in 2000. Well, see, I don't know what shape he was in as far as his health or anything, but I'm wondering, Robert, the episode we were talking about, 2002, yeah, he died in 2005. All right, he may not have been in good enough health.
Good health.
But
he lived long. A lot of those character actors from the 50s and 60s live a long time, like James Arness, and then because of the physical build that, you know, they were well built and took care of themselves and were able to live as long as they did. I mean, it was great to have Cloris Leachman. She's still alive. I mean, she. Yeah. Came back in the sequel.
She did a great job in that sequel. She really did.
Yeah. Yeah.
A couple of things I want to add to that I forgot in my review. Well, I just wanted to say that the funny part about this kid, or characters like this in stories in which they either try to take over the world or they try to get rid of everybody that doesn't meet their favor. And this isn't the only story this happens in. It makes no sense, because if you're going to send everybody to the cornfield and you're going to get rid of everybody in the world, what do you gain from that when everybody's gone? You're the only one left. I don't see what the purpose is of being that way. And I would have liked to have seen the story have an ending, really, in which he sends everybody to the cornfield except himself.
Well,
and finally, he's the only one left.
Well, that happened.
But still life is...
In the sequel,
yeah, I don't remember well enough to remember that. Is that how it ends, really? I didn't realize that.
Yeah. He pushes everyone away, and his daughter says to him, "What's wrong, Daddy?" And he says, "Oh, I guess I'm just a little lonely." He is lonely because it's just him and her. That's it.
Yeah, so this business and like I said, there are other stories, too, in which you wonder exactly where it's going when there's no point in having a world that only you favor unless you've got somebody to rule over. It really doesn't prove anything. The other thing I don't remember the sequel well enough, because I generally put sequels out of my mind.
Watch it again tonight.
Okay, fair enough. The other thing I wanted to say about it, as far as the act, as far as Billy Mumy is concerned, is that it's absolutely thrilling to realize that both Billy Mumy and Ron Howard not end up in the trash can like so many other child actors do. They didn't turn to drugs. They didn't become alcoholics. They didn't commit suicide. Or anything, because that's all the tabloids care about. That's all the news cares about, is how people ended up, whether they're in therapy or they lost their minds or whatever. It's hard to turn on the news and not see that every single solitary night. And here's two famous kid actors who had the right kind of life.
No,
and
they didn't write
nice
about
that.
It
it's,
because they'd end up in the cornfield.
Some of the real ones in the world need to end up in the. Some of the real ones in the world need to end up in the cornfield. But it's just nice.
Well, I'll tell you what, they better have a big cornfield with Audrey out there now, because now she brought the world back.
Exactly.
And if they don't do what we say.
Of course, a lot of writers peddle corn, don't they, anyway?
Right. Well,
it's just nice to see, for a change, actors who have been around since they were little kids, somebody grow up and have the right kind of life, and because you see it so rarely. And it gives you hope that you can become an actor and you can... be famous and not go crazy. Not everybody does, but watching TV or watching the news, you would think that you're doomed if you do that. So every time I see him or I see Ron Howard, I think to myself, what is it about them that made them avoid what everybody else walked right into? It's quite remarkable.
Right. So, Rick, what do you have to say? I really want to hear what you have to say about this episode.
Oh, God. Everything I have to say has already been said.
Oh, and Rick says, oh, God, we know it.
Well, say it anyway.
Personally, I thought it was one of the better, best episodes. Scared the hell out of me when I was younger. Still kind of does. God, I don't... Like I said, everything's been done. I really can't add anything.
Now, come on, Rick. The computer's working. Here's your chance.
Come on, Rick. Come on, Rick. Rick.
No, actually, it was Skype last time. Anyway.
Tell me about that.
Did you ever watch the sequel that we were talking about, Rick?
Yeah, I vaguely remember it, though. Like Bobby, I vaguely remember it. I haven't seen it in years.
I think I saw it 6 months ago, and Bobby doesn't remember it. I have to watch it again tonight.
Because I don't want to. I don't probably need to remember it. So what?
Now, Bobby, you let Lynn get drunk, you let her pass out, and then you switch the channels.
Okay? Yeah.
There you go.
I'm just the type. Yeah.
No, you guys are mean. You're mean.
But if I could add a couple of things, like Bob was saying, there were and still are some scary episodes of other shows with kids. Like anybody remember the episode of X-Files called Eve?
Oh yeah.
Oh,
first
Robert
season.
Probably
yep.
does. Yeah.
About the clones.
Yeah, there were a set of twins, actresses. They did such a great job playing creepy kids. It wasn't funny. Two young girls that scared the hell out of
them. Well, how about in The Shining? You had the two twin girls in The Shining.
Oh, yeah, that too. Yep.
Okay, there you go. There's creepy kids. Ooh, yeah, they give me the chills even thinking about them. Ooh.
Yeah, but this is the early 60s, and nobody in the early 60s dared to suggest that kids can be that evil. It's most unusual.
Oh, yeah.
Kids are evil, though. Kids can be very evil when they want to be. Oh, come on. How many times when you were in school, the parents and teachers said, well, kids can be cruel. Kids can be cruel. Yes, kids can
not,
be cruel.
Not in the society anymore, Lynn. Nah, bullies are bad. Now, where were these freaking
That's
people
right,
when
bullies.
I was young?
Yeah, where
yeah.
the heck was everybody when I was being bullied
and made
fun of?
Yes, no bully. Yes, nobully.com, right? No bullies. Exactly. There's all these bully sites now. I mean, but kids are cruel. Kids are evil. Come on, kids are come on. I was a real small kid growing up in school. I was right now, at this very moment, I am 4'9". I will always be 4'9" until I shrink to 4'8" when I get older. But anyway, I was 4'9". Growing up in school, I was the shortest kid always in class. And I was always picked on. I got not exactly beat up. Picked on and punched around and kicked around, you know. And come on, you're going to tell me kids aren't cruel? Kids are cruel. They're evil. They're nasty.
Lynn, we'll
suck.
Try to find Rick Moranis for you. See if he can, you know, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. See if he can.
Well,
yes,
exactly. I would appreciate that. I would appreciate that because kids suck. Kids, and you know what? I don't have kids. You know why I don't have kids? Because I don't want to have to deal with that.
Because they suck?
I don't.
Well, kind of a full circle, you know, quote right there, man.
That was good. No.
There goes our rating.
You guys, I don't want to have to deal with telling my kids not to be mean to other kids.
Little leprechauns, they're so evil, don't you know, them leprechauns.
I don't want to have to tell my kids to not to be nasty to other kids. Because you know what? They're going to be nasty to other kids. I don't want to deal with that. I never had kids. I don't want kids. I don't want to be bothered with them. I'm happy.
That's why
not
they suck. See, now we go around again.
So they suck.
That's
you know what?
Yeah.
I will deal with other people's kids. I'll deal with other people's kids. I have nephews. I have nieces. I have kids that I know. But I don't want my own. Because I'm telling you, I don't take any kind of crap from kids. So you give me kids that are going to be smart mouths, and I'm going to end up in jail. Because I'm not going to take any crap from them. So anyway. Okay. So that's...
Anyway, I never gave my rating.
What's your rating, Rick?
5.
Before we get into another section.
5.
Oh, great. Oh, my.
Oh, Rick, I love Rick.
Yes.
No, we love Rick. I love Rick. What's the drunken sailor?
Hey, hey.
There we go.
Good morning.
Oh no, we broke Lynn. We broke her. We knew someday would happen after all these episodes. Well, Bobby, I hope you got the tape ready. Or, you know, actually, I'd say duct tape works wonders.
I got a gaffer's tape, but a lot of good it does here.
I can't talk.
Well, you wouldn't want to mention what next time's episode is anyway.
Oh, so. What's the next? What's the next episode?
Well, if you just so happen to ask that,
some show
Deaf Heads Revisited is the next episode.
What is? What?
Deaf Heads Revisited is the next episode.
Oh, good. Yeah, good.
Now we
can
talk about deaf.
A nice light comedy. Yes, a nice light comedy. A nice light comedic episode. Deaf Heads Revisited.
Right.
Yeah, them Nazis, yeah, they knew how to be comical, didn't they?
Yep.
Oh, my.
You guys.
We get an evil kid to an evil ex-Nazi. Yeah, commandant.
And that's on the 31st? That's on the 31st.
Yep, as far as I see. I got my calendar right this time. I'm in March, so, yeah. Definitely 31st.
Won't be here for that
Why?
One.
Why? Why?
I'm
Why
going,
not?
I'm going to a convention.
No.
Yes.
No. You cannot do that. You must
Too
be
bad.
Here. Where are you going?
To Icon.
Oh, right.
Oh, I heard of Icon. Yeah, cool.
In
well,
New
you
York,
have fun.
Wait, mm-hmm. Where is that? In New York?
Yeah.
Hey. Oh,
couple of
take
towns
me with,
away from me.
Take me with you. I want to go back to New York. Oh, you people.
Oh, aren't
oh.
you enjoying the rain of Seattle? Isn't it fun?
Yeah, with all my heart and soul, baby.
It was 60.
Philadelphia and New York being
it
sunny.
It was 62 and sunny here today.
Shut up.
Yeah, it's about 75 here in Ohio, so
oh,
where Peachville is, where we have the cornfield.
You're a bad man. You're a very bad man. I'm wishing you all in the cornfield.
You're a bad man. You're a very bad man.
Don't damp me.
Oh, horrible people. Oh, my God. All right. 31st. On the 31st, we have, what is that episode again, Robert?
Death Heads Revisited.
All right,
and
all right.
And then fun-lobbing Nazis. Woohoo!
All right. Nazis. Hey, Nazis! Woo! Nazis! All right.
Springtime for Hitler and the Nazis.
Springtime for Hitler. Yeah.
Springtime for Hitler and Germany.
Germany.
Suddenly the cornfield sounds such a bad place.
Yeah.
Okay, all right. You guys, come on, let's stop it. All right, we have to be professional here.
I think we long past went professional a while back when.
All right,
that's
okay. All right. Now I'm going to become. Now I'm going to become very professional here. Okay, everyone.
Kids
up. On
just
March.
That.
All right, everyone. On March 31st of 2012, we will be reviewing Death's Head Revisited, and we will have here the most wonderful, wonderful group of reviewers and co-hosts, and that will be Dave from England, Dave Cooper, the great Dave Cooper.
From Manchester. Yay!
From Manchester.
I remember.
Great Dave
Manchester,
Cooper.
Manchester, Dave.
We would like to have Mr. Rick Wall, the great Rick Wall, but he says they have something better to do. Well,
And I don't blame them. They got some good guests coming at that icon. So.
Ah, shut up. And we will have the great Robert Wentz. Oh, the great Robert Wentz, the icon. And we will have Bobby Neer. Bobby Neer. Hello, Bobby.
I'm here.
All right.
You get the scorecards out and start marking them.
Yes, the very exuberant. The very exuberant Bobby Neer will be here. Okay, so we got the exuberant Bobby Neer, and we will have me, which is really all you need. If you come in here, you got me. That's all you need. And you know,
you're so special. You're special.
I'm special. I'm special. And we do have Felix. Now Felix left, and this is a very upsetting because Felix never leaves before the end of our show.
Oh, he knew we were done a long time ago.
I think maybe Felix is drinking some Baileys, huh? Okay. All right. Well, we're all done tonight. All right. This is the
We were done a long time ago, Bobby said.
It was about a half hour ago. An hour ago. All
Happy
right.
St. Patrick's Day, everybody.
Happy St. Patrick's Day, and I love all you guys, and I hope to see most of you here in 2 weeks. And Rick, all right. If you can't be here, I understand.
I'll
but
try,
you,
but I doubt that.
Try. Okay, but if you can't, I still love you. You'll be here for the next show.
Yep.
All right. Awesome. Okay, everybody. Have a happy St. Patrick's Day.
Bye.
Yum, yum, yum.
Bye.
Before I play the outro, let's play a little Irish drinking song on the way out here. So, happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody.
Happy St. Patrick's Day.
At Patrick McNally's, you'll find what you need. Each patron will raise you his glass. The barkeep's a right jolly fellow indeed. Just tip him or he'll kick your... Well, we drink and we laugh and sometimes we do fine. And then we'll sing a song and we'll make it all right. And we'll all go home friends at the end of the night. And sleep long past break of daylight. Old Thomas would stay here all night if he could, but leave when his old lady calls. He knows if he doesn't, his old lady would give him a swift kick in the... Well, we drink and we laugh and sometimes we do fight. And then we'll sing a song and we'll make it all right. And we'll all go home friends at the end of the night. And sleep long past break of daylight. The barmaid's a sweet lass with long golden hair. She works hard and she never quits. The barflies all eye her, but also beware. She'll punch you if you grab her. Well, we drink and we laugh and sometimes we do fight. And then we'll sing a song and we'll make it all right. And we'll all go home friends at the end of the night. And sleep long past break of daylight. Sometimes when Big Seamus has too many beers, he goes off and throws a huge fit. He'll grab you and lift you by both of your ears. Hurt so much you'll scream holy. Well, we drink and we laugh and sometimes we do fight. And then we'll sing a song and we'll make it all right. And we'll all go home friends at the end of the night. And sleep long past break of daylight.